Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All righty, hour number two here on Tiki and Tierney. What's going on? CBS Sports Radio coming from our Rocket Mortgage studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket Camp. Big hour. A lot of hoops here. So a lot of very diverse show, very eclectic show. You think about this. I mean, usually do a ton of football, so that's no surprise. Do a ton of hoops as well. Next hour, though, we'll get into the fracture that has permeated European soccer. It's anarchy out there. My goodness. We'll do that coming up at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific. Squeeze in a little baseball, that great Padres-Dodgers series. That was awesome. Yankees are really scuffling. I know Brian Cashman keeps saying, well, it's too early, not going to mess around. Well, he's got to say that because he's the one who built this horrendous team that doesn't run, doesn't pitch, and doesn't necessarily catch the baseball very good. So we kind of bounced around.
Can't hold a lead, can't do anything well.
Yeah.
They're hitting some home runs every now and then.
That's what they're doing, though.
Yeah, great. It makes you feel good. You're like, oh, okay. You're still down four.
Even that, yeah, I know. But even that doesn't even make me feel good because even if they were mashing home runs and instead of being 5-10, they were 10-5, I still would not have seen anything that would embolden me to say that the Yankees stylistically have now found the recipe to win in October.
Yeah.
All these meaningless home runs during the regular season, yeah, they're great. You know, listen, you know, I love K's call. You know, Colton runs around almost, see ya! Like, he thinks he's K half the time doing it. He loves the home run call. And I do too. And the Yankees generally give you a lot of home runs. The problem is, when you get to October and you're facing legitimate ones and twos and guys are filthy and you're not, you know, you're not centering the baseball, you know, you got to have some wheels. You got to catch the baseball. You got to make baseball plays. And they have not done that for years. And this team's not doing it. I mean, between Stanton, who can't run, and, you know, they got problems. Sanchez can't run. Urshela can't run. Frazier can't hit.
Yeah.
Sometimes Brett Gardner, who I love, but
guys
hitting third sometimes.
Was he 36?
Yeah. 30 hits. I know. Aaron Hicks has been horrendous in the field, too. Yanks got issues. I don't know. I mean, I want to say that the Nets have issues. I do. I because the evidence is there. All right, they lost a tough one. Yes, a great game against Miami. Maybe that gets Miami going, who's been scuffled a bit. Bam Adebayo hit the game-winning jumper at the horn. Nice win. Durant took a shot to the thigh. It's a contusion. By the way, for all the things that I've had, all right, ruptured Achilles, Tommy John surgery, a second surgery on my elbow to remove loose particles, back surgery. I still don't officially know. Like, I know a contusion is a bruise, but what would you describe a contusion as?
I unfortunately had many of these, BT.
Good, perfect.
Because, you know, we like to be vain as football players and like, I don't need to wear those pads. I don't need that pad. And so I used to wear these little thigh pads that were, you know, maybe covered a third of my quad, maybe, right? Just because they look cool. And I remember I got drilled right underneath it and right before my knee pad. So there was like this big gap between my knee pad and my thigh pad. And I got drilled there. And it hurt. Like any hit hurts. But then what happens is it was so hard, it started to swell. And all of a sudden you get like, I don't know, blood build up in there, and there's really nowhere for it to go. So your quad gets stiff, your muscles tighten up, and before you know it, it's less about the pain, it's more about the lack of functionality, right? Your muscle just starts to shut down. So I don't know why this is the case, but when you get swelling in joints or around your muscles, the muscle shuts down, and other muscles have to compensate. So you got to be really careful. When you start going hard again.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, you can do some serious damage to yourself. So that's why it's an issue. It'll go down if you treat it properly. And it's probably only, a couple-day thing, 3 or 4-day thing, maybe a week if it's really bad. But I've had plenty of those, and they don't feel good.
Now, but you're also a football player, and you know, you're going to tough it out because
true,
that's what
but,
you guys do.
But knees, but it's the knees, right? For them, think about it. Because how did this happen?
It was a knee to the thigh.
Exactly. So a knee is bony, and it's like pain. Like it's hard.
It's sharper.
Exactly. So a knee to the thigh. I mean, it's almost like a helmet to the thigh.
So what are you saying? A couple of weeks? I mean, what does this mean for Kevin Durant?
I think it'll be a week. I mean, he limped off a little bit. It's not like he was, you know, like, get me the stretcher.
No, he stayed in the game for a little bit.
I know, exactly. That's what I mean. But he eventually limped off a little bit. So I think it's only going to be a week or even less. So
okay.
But
okay.
It's not even the point. The point is he's not playing again. And neither is James Harden, and Kyrie is left on his own.
Yeah, and they've lost 4 of 8, and a few of those wins were against, you know, downtrodden T-Wolves,
yep.
the Hornets right now, who can't win without Ball. They're falling, you know, pretty swiftly in the standings. And listen, a win is a win, but just context of not only have they lost 4 of 8 games, but some of those wins were against teams that, I mean, most teams are beating these days. So I wouldn't put too much emphasis on those W's here. Now, so what does this mean big picture? First of all, you know, I've heard some stuff today, and I totally disagree. Like, okay, you want to say that Kevin Durant's becoming a bit injury prone? All right, maybe I can have that conversation. Maybe. To me, this is basic stuff. I don't know how anybody wouldn't get this, but it has nothing to do with the Achilles. Mm-hmm. This is just an inadvertent shot as you're going to the hoop, and knee catches you flush, and it hurts.
Yep.
And that's it. This is not connected to the Achilles. This is not connected to the calf. This is not anything where structurally you can say that there was an erosion of strength because, you know, other things were trying to compensate.
Yeah.
And no, that didn't happen. He just took a flush shot. So while I'm not worried about that, I am worried about two things. And one is obvious. Their inability to get on the court as a trio, mm-hmm. which we can get back to in a minute. But I'm also worried about what you just said. Now, as the other muscles try to overcompensate, you know, he's, even if he misses a week, right, when he gets back, he's not that far away from playing high leverage minutes because it's the playoffs.
That's right.
And there's really, we're getting past the point where you can kind of ease anybody. Same with James Harden when he gets back from the hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost go time. Now, you want to tell me the Nets with Kyrie and nobody else, they can win their first round matchup? I would probably agree with that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want to take a chance with that, but I would still probably agree.
Yeah, I would agree. Limited minutes, they'll be okay.
But, you know, as we get here, what are there, 11, 12 games left?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say Kevin Durant misses 4 or 5, you know, slowly makes his way back, and before you know it, boom, curtain goes up, it's playoff time.
Yep.
That's what worries me for Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I agree.
And the other stuff. Now I worry about the Achilles again.
Yeah.
And then I worry about the hamstring.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, Kyrie talked about both those things, the chemistry, but he also talked about KD's injury. This is Kyrie after this game, which happened yesterday.
It's just the timing of everything this season, this year, just been the telltale sign of what life is right now in terms of just the uncertainty of a lot going on. Anything could happen any moment, so you don't want to take anything for granted. But anytime one of our teammates goes down, anytime something like that happens, it's definitely going to take a hit for us. And he's just gotten back. So we just pray that it's not too serious and he's able to recover.
You know, what's interesting when you listen to that, BT, is it sounds like it's like, okay, here we go. All right, we've done this before. And he's almost getting used to, I don't know, having to be the guy. Now, in the absences of James Harden and Kevin Durant, Kyrie has been great, right? You can't knock him. I know we knock him for taking those personal days.
It's been great.
For whatever reasons, but he's been unbelievable when he's had to go it alone.
Best season, I think, for him. I think it's the best season he's ever had.
I think you're right. And we kind of speculated the maintenance personal days that he's taken, whatever they are, they're actually been really good for him because this is the first time in 3 or so years where he hasn't felt like he's battling some injury or something. And, you know, he might have to shut it down. Or I may have to get surgery in the offseason. It hasn't been any of that this season. And I think he's benefiting on court from all of that. But with that being said, like, they need to figure out how to play together because they've only played 7 games together so far this season, BT. 7 games.
Yep.
And, I mean, we saw it with the Clippers. We'll keep bringing it up because that matters. Once you get to crunch time basketball, playoff basketball, like the roles and the responsibilities and, you know, who's taking this shot, who's doing X, Y, Z at this point in the juncture in the game. Like, they don't have a clue. Mm-hmm. And they have a rookie head coach that's going to be in his first postseason at that exact same time as well. This, like, I don't want to say it's going to get ugly, but I hope it doesn't. But we won't know because I don't know if they're going to play together much before the playoffs start.
You know, it's – I'm not going to – you know. They don't deserve to win this championship. They don't deserve to win this championship. I guess you get what you earn. So if they do win it, you know, you can take issue with what I just said. But if you really think about this, man, I mean, you know, two of the best players in the world say, let's go play here. All right, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a month and a half, whatever it was, into the season, one of the other five or six, seven best players in the world says, get me out of where I'm at, get me there, and he's there. They haven't had any urgency in the regular season. A lot of it is because they haven't been together. I get that. I'm not saying that they don't want to win or they don't want to try to mesh and gel their talents. But, you know, like if they were to win the championship, it just further makes the regular season irrelevant. I think it would be a bad message for basketball if they win.
Hmm.
I really do.
Why?
For the reasons
why
I just said.
Why is it
shortcuts?
Yeah.
Shortcuts.
It's almost like you can just show up when you have to.
Pretty much.
And get it done and be fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know where they're seated right now.
I got to be second. I think the Bucks are still third. Yeah, because the Knicks are the sixth seed now.
Yes.
We'll get into the Knicks next segment. I looked yesterday. Believe the Bucks are three. I was checking who the Knicks would play if the series.
Yeah, they're still three games. Yeah, they're still three games clear of the Bucks. So
yep.
Even without having like end of season, regular season success, they're going to be the two seed. They're going to get I don't know who they're going to end up playing because of the play-in situation. But they're going to play a team that's at the bottom end of the East and walk their way through to the second round. Then they'll finally get healthy. And maybe they'll be all on the court together for seven games or however many games it is, five or six, in the second round. And then by the championship, they'll be fresh and ready to go. And I hear you. It's almost like, where was the grind? Like,
yeah,
the grind hasn't existed for them. It's been a health grind, but where's the grind of the regular season that we always, I don't know, appreciate when it's really good?
I mean, it hasn't even impacted their seeding, which is amazing. Like, if you think about it, say if they finish the second seed and Philly gets the first and Milwaukee's three, and all these injuries, as we've stated a few times, seven games the trios played together. So it's one thing if, like, because of the being ravaged with injuries, you play so few games together, and you kind of take your lumps, and you colossally underachieve, understandably,
yep,
record-wise, during the regular season, and you start as a seventh seed, everybody's healthy, you know, and you're winning road games against higher-seeded teams. Like, that would be more of a validation if you were to win the championship that way than just basically having none of your stars play, still getting the second seed, and still winning the championship. Like, it almost negates everything that we watch.
Yeah. That's right.
The urgency.
That's right. Now, which is why I say sometimes, BT, regular season NBA, it kind of gets hard sometimes. And this year in particular. So last year, this didn't apply. Last year, the Lakers had their foot on, like, fully on the gas from jump. Right? They were out to prove that they were the best team in basketball. And it carried through even after the pandemic stopped and in the bubble, where they went on and won the championship relatively easily, actually, given the opponent. But at the end of the day, right, you felt it from jump that they were going for it. Whereas this Nets team feels like they're just kind of, all right, it'll happen.
Yeah.
We're good enough. Doesn't
There's
matter.
No urgency.
Yeah, there isn't.
Well, the
an
other
urgency.
Day, last week, and we didn't really get on them for this because there's, I think we attacked it sensibly. But just last week, Kevin Durant told us that he's not motivated by championships anymore, which bothered a lot of people. It didn't really bother us because we understand. I think we were fair to Kevin and maybe some weren't. But he just said that last week, and, you know, Kyrie's, while it was an honest, truthful evaluation, it felt fairly ominous, like, you know, man, nothing's going right. I mean, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. It didn't seem like there was any urgency there. I'm not saying he's enjoying this. Clearly, they're not. But you talk about urgency, and this is where it gets really interesting for the Nets. Like, if they don't win this year, all right, can you imagine the pressure next year when you're going to have a full arena, full capacity? You're going to have, I'm looking at it now, the highest payroll. You have number two this year,
mm-hmm,
behind Brooklyn, behind the Golden State Warriors. Next year, you've already got $165 million on the books. The next closest would be the Warriors, but the Nets are number one next year, and they're number one the year after that if the player options kick in. And as we know, they can say, I'm going to go, you know, make more money or just whatever, try something else in a different city for a different team. The Nets, they kind of have to win. Like, I think, wouldn't it be embarrassing if they don't win?
Yeah, I think they're win. It depends. This is why if they play the Lakers, who are defending champions, but they also have similar injury situations, I could understand them losing to the Lakers. If LeBron comes back, he's fresh, he's in his prime, he feels like he's still playing in his prime even though he's 36 years old, I can see it. But if they lose to, it depends on who they lose to.
Yeah.
That would change it, right? And if they lose in the Eastern Conference, then it's even worse.
Oh, forget it.
Because that team is still going to be there the next year.
Well, and the thing about the Lakers, while, you know, AD and LeBron haven't played together in a long time, they played together last year in route to the championship.
That's right.
So tendencies and familiarity, they've been through the process together. And Harden, Durant, and Kyrie have not been. So, you know, it is amazing to me. And this is when Kevin Durant started tweeting at me. I'll say it now. I was watching the show. I'm not saying it to make a rise out of anybody. But just really, this does underscore how second fiddle the Nets are.
Yeah, agreed. I mean,
it is what it is.
Agreed.
I mean, you know, if this was the Lakers going through this, or if this was the Knicks, who we'll get into coming up next in the same city, it would be, you know, positioned and perceived very differently. It's an odd, I won't say it's quiet, because you have three huge names and they do get talked about, but I don't know that there's a ton of venom or urgency to...
Doesn't feel like it.
Doesn't feel that way, right?
At all.
I got you.
At all.
I got you. Well, something else is starting to feel a way that I almost forgot what it felt like to actually be proud of a team. The Knicks are carving out, the New York Knicks are carving out a little bit of a piece of the national spotlight. They're playing defense, they're making late buckets, they're having fun playing together, and they've got a core, as we'll discuss coming up next, that at least you can begin to envision the Knicks joining the big boys. I told you last week I thought the Knicks and the Heat was the next great rivalry in the Eastern Conference, and I'm going to stand by that. Let's talk some Knicks. We haven't done that a ton in terms of a full segment. They've earned it. We're talking Knicks next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. It's funny how quickly things can change when you get smart people, respected people, the right people in place. Let's get to the Knicks. The New York Knicks. Yeah, no, it's a team that has been laughed at for a long time. No doubt, rightfully so. Knicks have been atrocious. They haven't even garnered any attention. I mean, the only time, kind of like my football team, Teak, is like I've had a few crazy Dolan rants over the years you and I have been together, but that's really it. This year's a little different. I always get my, you know, Randall stuff in, that thing, the tweet I had with Randall and Bosch, that took off. Dwayne Wade said what he said about me, and, you know, we were able to inject that into the conversation. But outside of that, outside of this year, it has been ignoring a team that, quite frankly, deserved to be ignored. And what's happened now, and what's happened very, very quickly, to my surprise, I knew they'd play harder.
Yeah.
But all out of nowhere, the Knicks finally have a head coach. They have a superstar, and you can debate whether or not you think Randall's a superstar. I'm calling him a superstar at this point. They have a blossoming star in Barrett, who is a young beast. They've got a ton of draft equity. They've got multiple first-round picks, which means they could do things. Maybe not. I'm not saying you're going to find your star in the draft, but you could take those picks and package them and get a player who might want out elsewhere. And I read something over the weekend that maybe De'Aaron Fox could be gracing the skids for a little Sacramento departure, destination the Garden.
They had a huge victory yesterday against the Mavericks.
That. I know, I saw that.
Huge.
I mean, yeah, Porzingis got roasted.
Yeah, I mean, Porzingis has been terrible this year, BT. I hate to say it. He just, I don't
no,
know.
Say it.
Is.
I don't care. Good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, exactly. You love this. He defected on you. But they were up by 22 at that point. I mean, if it was not for the heroics of Luka, who was, I want to say, like 9 of, or maybe even 10 of, like 13 in the fourth. He scored like 24 points in the fourth period.
Yeah.
They get blown out by Sacramento.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
no, I
and
know.
And De'Aaron Fox was a big part of that. That's why you bring that up. He's a good player.
He's a really, really good player on a really, really not good team.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, behind the scenes, you get a little flex. Get me out of here. I'm not going to resign. If a team believes you're not going to resign, what happens? Martin NBA, bang.
Trade.
You dealt. Yeah. So let me play something, because The thing that I tried to stress to everybody last week, as I was running through some facts last week, Knicks, I believe they had maybe won their fourth straight at this point. Now it's six straight. By the way, Derrick Rose, what an alert play. Very easily could have shot that layup, go for the tie. Last second, sees Bullock in the corner. Great dish. Bangs it, go to overtime.
Yeah.
Run him out of the gym. It's an incredible win, right?
Yeah. By the way, this was Lonzo Ball's gross miscalculation.
Yes,
Lonzo
it was.
Has the wing over there. And he sunk in on. They're up by three, by the way.
Up by three.
The Pelicans are up by three. Lonzo cheats to help against Derrick Rose for a layup with 4.2 seconds left. And instead, he kicks it out to the corner and the 3-point. Obviously, tied, goes overtime, and the Knicks dominated in the extra period.
Yeah, and Derrick Rose can still play, by the way. He is still not quite as bouncy as he was, obviously, multiple knee surgeries. Derrick Rose. Has a lot of game and has a real passion. And he knows Thibodeau. They've worked together well. So you look at the Knicks and, you know, some of the stats I threw out last week that still apply. First defense, first in field goal percentage allowed, first in 3-point percentage allowed, third in overall defensive deficiency. They're one of a handful of teams that have given up fewer than 100 points 19 times. Like, the defensive numbers are there. But now you're starting to see. And you're starting to hear, and I want to play this from Zion, because this was my ultimate point last week. I said, you might not recognize it yet, all right, but I know Dolan still owns the team. He has not sold the team.
Yeah.
So you want to tell me that dynamic has not fully changed? You're literally right. But the difference now is that there are multiple buffers in between, and Dolan's always been hand-off. He's just been a bit buffoonish, but he's never been, like, day-to-day engaged like Steinbrenner at all. He would just kind of walk in at the last second and blow up a trade, which is what he did with Carmelo and some other things. But he's usually kind of off to the side. And now between Leon Rose and Worldwide West, you got two guys the entire league knows and respects. And now you're starting to hear stuff like this. Zion Williamson, post-game about the Garden.
New York is the mecca of basketball. I love playing here. When I played here in college, and this is my first time playing here in the pros, and I mean, this atmosphere, you know, whether they're cheering for you, whether they're booing for you, it's amazing. Honestly, I think outside of New Orleans, obviously, I think this might be my favorite place to play outside of New Orleans. I can't even lie to you.
Now, when that question was asked, it was not part of the cut that we played, but he said, you know, I'm glad you asked that, which means he was kind of waiting for that kind of question. Smart thrown in the New Orleans aspect. Do I believe him? Not necessarily. I believe that he enjoys playing at the Garden more than New Orleans, I believe. But he said the right thing as a young man. Teak, the league's noticing now. And what the Knicks had to do to – see, they always tried to take that fourth step before taking the first step. Mm-hmm. They always tried to get the stars to change the culture and save them.
Yeah.
Instead, they change the culture, and eventually they will either, you know, get stars or – it's funny. I put this out yesterday, and I got a lot of kickback from Knicks fans. They're like, no, hold on a second. You don't need to tweet that. We've already got a star or a superstar in Randall. Star, undeniable. Superstar, debatable. I get
debatable,
that.
Debatable, yeah.
I got that for sure. In Randall. And a blossoming star in Barrett. So you don't always have to recruit stars out there.
Yeah.
Things are changing, fam.
Yeah, but that's
things are changing for the Knicks.
But that's what
big
you're
time.
Saying. That's what you're saying, though. The stars, the superstar hasn't gone there recently. They did in the past.
Not really, just Amari.
Well,
and Carmelo via the
Carmelo,
trade.
And Carmelo, yeah, but they haven't gone there in the past. And so I just don't know why – I don't know, Knicks fans thought that this was just going to happen because there were a couple of stars there. At the end of the day, I hate to say it, it does come down to coaching. And if it's not, if you don't have the superstar like a LeBron or a great system like the Golden State Warriors did, you got to have some really great coaching. It's what we gave Eric Spoelstra, even managing the superstars, that first trio between LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. It was Spoelstra's managing of that trio that allowed them to be so successful. Now, great, you had great players, but you still need a great coach. And I think the Knicks finally got it right in hiring a coach who was just going to be fundamentally sound. And even guys who maybe on their best days prior to joining this team weren't good defenders, at least they try. right? And that's half the battle in the NBA, just giving it an effort. And that's why they're keeping games close, even when they lose some of these against some of the better teams.
And that's an interesting point because, and I didn't know that they were going to be, I thought they'd beat the Pelicans yesterday, but I tweeted yesterday morning, I said, you know, Knicks have won at that point five straight. And I pointed out some of the tough losses before the five-game win streak, right? 99-96 at Philly, 101-100 to overtime against the Sixers. Again, they had two in a row. 102-101, T-Wolves, but still on the road, whatever. You got to beat the T-Wolves.
Yeah.
But lost by a point. Lost by two at Brooklyn, 114-112. They lost by two at Boston. And then they went on this win streak. Like, those are games. When you lose, that's five games in a row. Not in a row, but five of eight where they lost by two or three points, last possession kind of thing. And it really speaks to their character and their resilience. And, you know, yesterday, another example of it. And I'm going to gloat a little bit here. I am going to gloat a little bit. I'm not saying the Knicks are going to upset whomever they play in the first round, although they might steal a game or two. And who knows if they get to the – like, if they played the Bucks, if they stay in the sixth seed, I mean, I would love for them to, but I'm going to give it to the Bucks. If they get up to the five spot, can they mess around? Like, you start to talk with Atlanta. Like, yeah, absolutely. If they're 4-5 matchup, I would think that they would win that first round matchup. But I'm gloating a little bit because your partner got skewered for that Bosh Randall take 2 months ago. I got roasted, and I sat here. I defended myself a little bit on the show because it was misrepresented, my ultimate point. I got Dwayne Wade going on national TV saying, don't embarrass yourself. People mocking it, and now it's funny. It's hysterical. I'm watching the same show. One guy I want to shout out. One guy of all the shows that actually interpreted what I wrote for what I wrote, not what they thought I wrote, was Jay Williams from ESPN, all right, with Keyshawn. And he's like, no, he's not saying that he has a better career than Bosh. I never said that. Bosh is champions. He got the offensive rebound, kicked it out to Ray Allen, Hall of Famer. I mean, stop. A ton of All-Star games. Right now, which is what I wrote 2 months ago, right now, you cannot tell me that Chris Bosh is better than what Randall's doing on a night-to-night basis, because he's not.
Yeah, no,
he
wasn't asked to be that guy, too.
Randall or Bosh?
Bosh wasn't asked.
No, in Toronto, he was asked to do that every night. That was Toronto. The first 8 years, 7 years of his career.
And again, nobody paid attention to. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Well, I did.
I mean, a lot of national viewers.
He was really good in Toronto.
Oh, man. I agree.
But they lost a lot of games. Like, people are kind of revising history. Like, oh, he elevated them. No, they had three 23-win seasons and a 30-win season.
He was an All-Star, but they weren't elevated.
Not at all. They had one good season with him.
And to be honest with you, who was the coach? I don't even remember who the coach was up there year.
Who's the coach?
I'm serious, though. But I think for Randall, it's a combination. I think it's a combination of him finally getting it, like living up to his potential that we all thought he had coming out of Kentucky, but also being paired with the right coach who holds him accountable so that he does have the attention to details and does it each and every night, not just for highlight purposes. So you got to give him credit, but you also got to give credit to the infrastructure around him.
No question. And, you know, the legacy of – it's going to seem like an odd connection to make, but in some way, like the legacy of Kobe – is shining through with Randall. Randall has spoken at length about how he watched Kobe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't really even know this until about 2 months ago, that when the Knicks land in whatever city they're in, no matter what time it is.
Oh, yeah, I heard this.
Randall goes to the gym.
Yeah.
Where they had their, not the arena because it's not open.
Yeah.
But whether it's a high school or a college, JUCO, where they do their what. And he gets shots up.
Yeah, and now he brings other guys with him, too.
And now Quickley's coming. Now Barrett's coming. I knew that Randall was talented. I did not know that he was a leader, okay? I definitely did not know that. I did not know that he had this incredible work ethic. And I didn't know that he had such a disdain for losing. Like, I really didn't. Like, I thought he was, for a little bit, and I don't mean this year, but even last year when he was with the Knicks, I thought he was kind of a hollow. I knew he was talented, but I thought he was a bit of a hollow numbers guy who, if he got 20-10 and they lost, he was relatively unaffected.
Yeah, he was.
He's
happy.
The exact opposite.
Yeah,
he is a dog, man. Yeah. Julius Randle wants to win.
That's what happens when you find success. When you start to feel
love
some
it.
Success, the good ones take and run with it. The average ones, they're just kind of okay with it.
Yep, nice little fun season at the Garden so far. Let's see where it takes us. Let's get Axe Update. We'll come back. Rick Bucher on all things NBA, KD's injury. Even I want to get to that De'Aaron Fox angle that I read over the weekend. Does he think that Sacramento might be motivated to trade him because they don't think that they can sign him? We'll hit NBA with Bucher after Axe Update, which is right now. Here's Rich. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio back. We're going to get to our buddy Rick Bucher in a moment. Continue talking some shop with the NBA. First up, time for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. Bring on spring with innovative help from the Home Depot mobile app. Download it today. To get started on spring projects, the Home Depot, how doers get more done. Terry Rozier carried the Hornets to an 8-point win over the Blazers yesterday. They won 109-101. He put up 34 to go along with 10 assists and a couple of rebounds. Almost, actually, 8 rebounds, almost a triple-double. So Rozier averaging a career-high 20 points per game, keeping Charlotte's somewhat faint playoff hopes alive. Obviously, without LaMelo Ball, they have not played the quality of ball that they were with LaMelo, Gordon Hayward as well. The Hornets currently sit as the 8th seed in the East, the whole play-in thing, so we shall see. All right, Tiki and Tierney here, CBS Sports Radio. T, got a chance to talk some shop, as I said, with our buddy Rick Bucher, who's all over the NBA and has been for a long time, FS1 NBA analyst. Buke, welcome back, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. How are you?
Great, man. Great. I finally have a representative product at the Garden. Let me hit you with this, Rick, because you're on the opposite end of the country. You are obviously further away from the noise, and maybe you're not going to get wrapped up in it like I am. If I said to you right now, Rick, Julius Randle is the what best player in the NBA right now, numbers-wise, where would you throw him?
Well, he was just named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week, if I'm not
mistaken. Yes, he was.
He was an All-Star this year. I'll put him in the top 50.
Top what?
50.
All right. You're not trying to get a rise out of me here, are you? You got to be kidding me with that top 50.
Well, he's not a superstar yet.
Are you serious?
How high do you want to go?
Right now... Buke, put it this way, Buke. If, and I know that this might change your answer, but I look at it as from this angle. If we are kind of still a little torn, you know, didn't live up to the draft hype in LA, bounced around. Like, if he put up these numbers and was responsible for winning, by the way, this year with the Knicks, and he did this for the last 2 or 3 years, which I believe he will do for the next 3, 4, or 5 years, I think that would change how people view him. Right now, Julius Randle's a top 20 player in the NBA. It's top 20.
He was borderline all-star. 24 guys selected to the all-star team.
I got it.
All-star team.
Yeah. Yep.
So I can't put him solid in the top 20. And here's this is my issue, is that, and I love what Julius Randle has done. I love even more what Tom Thibodeau has done with Julius Randle. Good players get their numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Great players, like the best player, and you probably, you know, I don't know how many of those are, but like superstar level players get their numbers and they get other guys' numbers. Mm-hmm. Julius Randle right now is getting his numbers, but he's not the kind of player and he's not having the kind of season where he's getting other guys.
I disagree, Buke. He's playing with a bunch of nobodies. Rick, I really, really disagree with that. He's playing with Bullock. He's playing with Nerlens Noel. He's playing with Elfrid Payton. He's playing with Barrett, who couldn't shoot before this season. Listen, you know I love you, but when I think you're wrong, I'm going to tell you, you are wrong the way you are assessing Julius Randle's season. You're wrong.
Julius Randle is not a playmaker for other players.
Yes, he is.
He's very good in isolation situations, but in terms of drawing a double team and then consistently either scoring, exploiting that double team, or finding the next guy,
mm-hmm.
he's not there.
We got to agree to disagree.
He doesn't have that in his game. And I've watched a lot of the Knicks because I'm fascinated by them and by what Tibbs once again has demonstrated what he can do coaching-wise, And I do think that you are underplaying the way that Tibbs has been able to harness all the different pieces that they have. Derrick Rose is the example of a guy who's a playmaker. I don't care what his numbers say. He orchestrates what they do on the floor, and he does so more so than Julius Randle does. I love what Randle is doing. I love that he has added the three-point shot. I love that he has become as much of a go-to guy as they have. But I can't give him that. He's the orchestrator of everything that they do offensively. He's simply not.
Tiki, would you ask him a different question? I'm getting annoyed here.
Let's move over to the West Coast, your coast, and talk about the Lakers for a second here, Buick. We know that you know AD and LeBron are banged up, and we saw this as a point of caution last year with the Clippers. They didn't play a lot together. Now, AD and LeBron obviously have a history because of last year and in the early part of this year, but what's the concern level with these two, one, working themselves back in? We're only, as BT and I were talking about, 11 games or so away from the start of the postseason. Yeah. Like, what's the worry out there in Los Angeles for those two superstars who we haven't seen on the court in a while now?
Well, look, the diehard Lakers fans don't think there's anything to worry about, that once AD and LeBron come back, that they've been able to maintain that they are one of the best, if not the best, defensive teams in the league without them, and that AD and LeBron are going to cure whatever offensive ills that they have. But for anybody else outside of the diehard Lakers fans, you can't. It's a false equivalence to compare this to last year when we had the shutdown and they came back for a couple reasons. Number one, everybody was shut down and came back. Two, this is coming off injury, not layoff, for these guys.
Yeah.
And the 8 or 9 games that they're going to have to play, like last year in the bubble, they were already established as a seed. Like they didn't have anything to play for in those 8 games. And so they could kind of coast and groove their way into being ready for the playoffs. For where they are in trying to avoid the play-in situation, when AD and LeBron come back, they're going to have to make a decision. Do we want to risk being in the play-in games, or do we want to make sure that we're not, and then we're going to have to play AD and LeBron? We can't ease them back in. We're going to have them go. And I think the other element that's been exposed is just how much they depend on LeBron offensively for this team, because they just have not been the same. And don't put AD – look, if I made you mad, BT, with Julius Randle, AD's in the same camp. AD is a great individual player. He's not a playmaker. He doesn't make the offense run. And so I put Julius in that same category. They do a lot of things at both ends of the floor. But in terms of making the game easier for everybody else, that's the one element that is rare air that I can't put them in.
Okay, all right. We still agree to disagree a little bit. I'm going to move past that one on Buick.
When did this Julius Randle fascination begin with, infatuation begin with you? This is new. This has to be new territory.
This is very new territory. But
last year?
Well, now listen, I thought, to be fair, I thought he was a bit of a hollow, certainly a hollow numbers guy who didn't get it, who didn't make his teammates better. And who didn't necessarily have a passion for winning. The Julius Randle that I've seen unlocked this year by Thibodeau is a guy who's rolling into a city at 1 in the morning, win or lose, off the charter flight, going to get shots up at the gym, dragging Quickly and Barrett and everybody else with him. I think he's diversified and evolved his game. So he got himself in great shape. I like him a lot more than you. That's it.
He's not winning the MVP.
I'm not saying he is.
Who's winning the MVP this year? Because it's a big man for the first time in a really long time. Who do you like here to win the MVP?
Yeah, look, I understand why Jokic is the leader in the clubhouse. I have a vote in this and have had one for the last 25-some years. I'll be honest. I am trying not to I'm trying not to handicap this early because there are so many variables.
Interesting.
I do think Joel Embiid is still in the mix. Steph Curry will be on my ballot, but he can't possibly win. James Harden is taking himself out of it because of the games that he's missing.
Yep. What about Chris Paul?
What makes it really difficult is that every one of these guys, I mean, do you give it to Jokic just because he hasn't missed games?
Is he the only one? I think he is the only one, right?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And I just, you know, again, watching a lot, and I feel better about Jokic this year than I ever have. But there are games where he looks absolutely stymied. The numbers look good, but there are matchups where it looks like he can't impose his will, and that gives me pause to make him the MVP. So I'll be honest with you. Jokic is the leader in the clubhouse. There's two parts to this. One, there's how I look at it, and then there's how I think the voters collectively are going to look at it. And those two don't always match up.
That's true. I would vote for Embiid. I don't have a vote. You know, we got to wrap it up. We have about 30 seconds. Rick Bucher, FS1 NBA analyst, who really knows the game well. I mean, he knows the game as well as anybody I know, despite his idiotic take on Randall. Just kidding. Give me 30 seconds. I know he'll never win the award, but if you look at literally what the award means, shouldn't Chris Paul garner some consideration?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, in my mind. And he won't because, you know, look, the fallback always is the numbers and whatnot. And is he the best player on the team? He has had such a profound effect on that Phoenix Suns team that he's another guy that should be there. And Giannis Antetokounmpo isn't going to win 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
But I like his game better this year than I have in any of the previous 2 years. And I didn't vote for him the last 2 years at the top of my ballot.
What did he change? It was
Harden the year before.
What did he change real quick?
10 seconds on that answer, Buke. 10 seconds, pal. What did he change, Giannis?
His game offensively is more varied. I'm seeing him take shots in the mid-range when they need to be taken. He's still not hitting them at a great clip, but he's able to operate below the free throw line as a playmaker more than he ever has before, and he's showing a confidence in that part of his game. And you don't have to make them all. You just have to take them when they have to go up so that everybody else can react accordingly.
Rick Bucher, FS1 NBA analyst. Buke, good having you back on. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you soon, pal. Thank you.
My pleasure, guys.
You got it. 50th. 50th. See, he knows me well enough. He knew that would get me a little annoyed. 50th. Give me a break. 50th. Soccer. Mess. Europe. Next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.